You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colton Molesky, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. Make sure to check out the Locked On Wolves fan rag website for written content, as well as prior podcasts. Had a lot of great guests on recently, so you should go check out those episodes. Today, we're going to be talking about the playoffs. We have the Rockets and Timberwolves playing tomorrow, but we're not going to talk about that. I have a preview episode of that going on tomorrow. Jeremy Brenner of the Dream Shake via SB Nation is going to be on the podcast talking about the Rockets and the Timberwolves game two. But there are other playoffs going on. The NBA playoffs involve 16 teams, not just the two teams, the Timberwolves and the Rockets. There's 14 other teams playing basketball. Want to talk about that, and I couldn't think of anyone better to talk about that with than the Flying Hawaiian, the Northwestern extraordinaire broadcaster who loves sports and who loves to talk about basketball almost as much as anything else. Brendan Scarborough, thank you so much for joining the show.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me, Colton.
Of course. We've been talking about basketball how long? For 4 years now. Every season we've been talking about basketball. We have at least once a week, we have an hour-long conversation about basketball, our thoughts and feelings and opinions. We've cried about basketball games together. We've laughed. We've jumped for joy. We've had great moments watching the playoffs together. So we've got to talk about the NBA playoffs together.
Yep. Yes, we do.
So we're going to go West Conference first, then Eastern Conference. We're going to not talk about the Timberwolves and the Rockets. Again, tomorrow, having Jeremy Brenner on to talk about that. We're going to skip over that. We're going to go through every series, Western Conference, Eastern Conference, just your reactions, your thoughts. Most of these are only a game in, so granted, it's kind of a small sample size, but you still have a body of the season going into it. You kind of know about these teams. So just reactions to them playing the first game. Let's kick it off with the Warriors and the Spurs. For me, this is kind of one of those series where you don't really have to watch too closely. The Kawhi saga has continued on into the postseason. Looks like he's not going to play via a report from Yahoo Sports. And Golden State has had maybe not easy because LaMarcus Aldridge is still putting everything he's got into the series, but they're still breezing past the Spurs. This is a series you don't really have to worry about for the Warriors, right?
No, not at all. And I would say a lot of people were saying, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge is going to do his thing and the Spurs are going to play Spurs ball. And you know, a lot of people have gotten the first part right. LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, yesterday playing pretty well, 34, 12, and 3. Mm-hmm. But you're not really seeing much from the other contributors. You know, Danny Green with no points yesterday. You know, you had Patty Mills, who scored 21, but not a lot of people are contributing to this, you know, Spurs team. And you can't have Klay Thompson going off for 30 points every game. You can't have, you know, Kevin Durant dropping 32 on you. So it's not looking like the Spurs we're used to seeing. And, yeah, if I'm the Warriors, I'm not really worried right now.
Well, it's tough to really blame them for anything because their best player is out. And it's really hard, especially when he's such a big contributor on both ends, to overcome that. I wanted to get to the Portland-New Orleans series, which looks like it is going to be fantastic. You had them playing on Saturday. You have New Orleans beating Portland 97-95, despite the push from Portland late in that game. The guards, Anthony Davis is the one that everybody's going to watch. The guards in Rajon Rondo and Drew Holiday, specifically on the defensive side, really gave Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum problems. What did you think of this game? And do you think that, kind of looking back, if the Pelicans can win this series, that's kind of the story, is that the guards, not just Anthony Davis, were really key in this series against such a great backcourt in McCollum and Lillard?
Yeah, totally. And you know, we're looking, you know, Rajon Rondo, you know, throughout his career, he's not going to score a ton of points on you. He's not going to light you up for like 30 like Damian Lillard or McCollum might. But what Rajon Rondo is going to do is play really good defense, and he's going to make sure that he distributes the ball well. And, you know, that gives the Portland Trailblazers team fifth, I think, a little bit. And Rajon Rondo, you know, he's the matchup is very good for him. It favors him defensively a little bit. You know, he has a very long wingspan. You know, he's very quick. So I think that this matchup is really good for him. And, you know, as we can see, as you said, he's giving them fits. He's doing his job really well. And I think this can be a fantastic series down the stretch for the Pelicans.
Well, and not only Rondo, but Holiday as well. Both of those guys playing long and really doing a great job disrupting passing for the Trailblazers. You saw Rondo in that game 117 assists. He's clearly looking to pass the ball around, really feed Davis. Davis responds with 35 points. I think this team is just been so fast since Cousins left the starting lineup. They've played so fast. They've done a really good job of building offense that not only centers Davis but also plays off of his strengths. And you see Holiday doing a good job with outside shooting, knocking down shots after he gets that contract in the offseason, having a career year. So this is a team that it looks really dangerous and might be primed for an upset. Moving on, we have the Oklahoma City Thunder and Utah Jazz. Playoff Paul George, we were talking about this the other day. Playoff Paul George might be the scariest player in this series, much less on the Oklahoma City roster, but also just in this series, Playoff Paul George might be the scariest player.
Yeah, Playoff Paul George is... Colton, who's scarier to you? Playoff Paul George or Hoodie Mello? I don't know.
You know I love Hoodie Mello. I love Hoodie Mello. But Playoff Paul George was just nasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. And, you know, Paul George really coming into his element, really playing just his brand of basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul George able to shoot, able to drive, just, you know, and that's what we love about him. He's so versatile. He's able to score in so many ways. He's able to contribute in so many ways. And definitely, you know, a great pickup by the Thunder, as we're saying, paying dividends now. And this team looks good. The Thunder look good. And definitely something to be afraid of if you're in the Western Conference.
Quick question before we get to a break and then go to Eastern Conference on the Oklahoma City Thunder, just because this is such an interesting team with the three all-stars or all-star level players that you have on their roster in Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony, it seems like the thing that stands between them being just a decent playoff team and them actually vying for a finals trip, it seems like the difference there is just playoff awareness, roster awareness, and the players really being aware of their spots. Paul George, obviously, you want him playing. He's going to play really solid defense. You hope he gets back to the defense that he was playing in December and January, and him knocking down outside shots after Russell Westbrook kind of drives and kicks. Russell Westbrook, you want him to not take too many shots, especially late in games and crunch time. You want the ball to keep moving and keep seeing those passes that you know he can make. You have Steven Adams. He's going to play really solid on the boards. And then Carmelo Anthony, if he can slide into a role that seems to be more, I don't think he'll ever be a guy who's off the bench, but if he plays more like a sixth man and less like a guy who needs to take 20 shots a game, if he is a guy who's totally comfortable in that 12 to 15 shots a game kind of range, is that kind of the thing that stands between them and real playoff success, is just every player kind of knowing where their spot is?
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about this with, like, a lot of teams. This is how it is. It's kind of – and that's kind of what a good basketball team does. You know, knowing mm-hmm. your role and performing it to the best that you can. I think Carmelo Anthony needs to realize, hey, you know what? I'm a good scorer, but I'm not the best scorer on this team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not the number one option anymore. But mm-hmm. I need to be okay with that. And in order for me to get a ring, which he's been trying to relentlessly pursue, and it didn't work when he was the number one option at the Knicks, and when he was or the number two or the number three. But I'm just saying, he needs to realize, hey, right now, this isn't my team. But if I assist and if I help out in the best way I can and play unselfish basketball, we can be really successful going forward.
Absolutely. I think that it's the one of the ultimate ceiling floor teams in the playoffs for the Western Conference, especially. We're going to take a quick break for sponsors before we get over to the Eastern Conference. I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about the Cavaliers. I'm gonna save them for last because you're a LeBron guy, and they had an interesting game to say the least, breaking the 21 game streak that LeBron had in the first round of the playoffs. So we're gonna save them for last. Gonna go Toronto, Washington. Really, the ultimate system versus talent kind of matchup here in this first round. What do you think of this series?
You know, I think it's really good. And it's, like you were saying, system versus talent. You know, Toronto has just been, again, kind of like, we've seen them have success in the past. We've seen mm-hmm. them play Cleveland in order to get to the finals. We've seen them give them, you know, a really good competition. But this is the year, I think, that Toronto has really come into their system, has really bought in to their brand of basketball, and they're performing it perfectly. You know, this is, I say without healthy Kyrie and without healthy Gordon Hayward, probably the most dangerous system in the East right now. But yeah, they're just playing a great brand of basketball. And then you, across the board, you have Washington, who, you know, talent-wise, John Wall, Bradley Beal, those guys just, you know, you can never know what you're going to get from them, you know. But
yeah, their ceiling is so high.
As you said, yeah, ceiling is so high for them. But at the same time, we've also seen games where it's like, okay, this isn't who we're used to seeing. But yeah, it's really exciting, and I could really see this going either way. But it's an exciting matchup for sure.
You see, kind of the Achilles heel for the Wizards in that first game, points off of turnover for the Wizards, 20 points off of turnover. A lot of those coming early in the first half of that game. That's going to be something, if they can't control that a little bit better, and you know they like to play fast, you know they like to, they're a little bit in the Warriors vein of play where they like to make a bunch of three-point run shots out of the chaos. They like to make a little bit of a run out of chaos, out of the transition. And so out of that, a little bit of detractor for them is they've had some turnovers trying to get down the court too quickly, and you saw Toronto cash in on a lot of those. So hopefully they can keep those down. But again, very tight series, really fun series to track. Next one I wanted to go to, Boston versus Milwaukee. Really, really great game. You had the last second shot for the Milwaukee Bucks to send it to overtime, and then the Boston Celtics able to edge out the Milwaukee Bucks in OT. Really fantastic game with the Celtics coming out 113-107 winners. In this one, how many points do you give the Celtics for the coaching? How many points do you give Brad Stevens as a coach? Do you give them like a 10-point bump for the coaching advantage?
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, we talked about this a couple days ago. Brad Stevens, really, right now, his two all-stars that he was going to have this season are both out. You know, Gordon mm-hmm. Hayward, Kyrie Irving. Right now, and even though Al Horford is really good, he's a role player. And he has a team of role players, and he's still able to throw out a really good roster, and he's still able to give us, you know, a great-looking lineup who's able, and we said this before with Carmelo, performing their role well. You know what I mean? They're not mm-hmm. like, Kyrie's out, I got to drop 17 assists and 25 points. No, you don't have to do that. You know, just do your job, do the system well. And, you know, Brad Stevens is really good at that. He's really good at just breaking down what he needs from each player, and you see it paying off.
And here, too, I am really impressed with a rookie. We didn't really talk too much about Donovan Mitchell for the Jazz. We'll talk about Ben Simmons here coming up. But Jason Tatum, really impressive in this game. Really impressive contribution. He's been good all season long, but it's one thing to do it in the regular season. It's another to have 19 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 steals in the postseason. And really impressed with him, really impressed with his cool, his calm in the playoffs in that first game. Again, it is a small sample size, but it's a huge contribution, especially when you're missing, like you said, all-stars. And let's not forget, Marcus Smart, a key contributor, a key guard on this team, also out for them. So lots of injuries, a really snake-bitten team coming in and having a big contribution from Jason Tatum, from Jaylen Brown, from Terry Rozier, Al Horford, a big contributor, Marcus Morris doing a fantastic job, 21 points off the bench. Just a bunch of guys stepping up and really finding their role on this team and playing it to perfection.
Exactly. And that is how this team is going to be successful down the road. And that's all you kind of really need out of these guys. And just, as you said, perfection.
All right. The series that a lot of people were amped up for, jazzed up for, Philly fans, they have the Super Bowl ring. Villanova brings the championship in the college hoops realm to the city. Now the 76ers are in the playoffs. And after 4 years of tanking, they have home court advantage against the Miami Heat. And you saw two sides of kind of the coin for the 76ers and the Heat. The first game, just really surprising game from the 76ers, really well played. You saw probably the best case scenario without Embiid in the 130-103 win as they beat the Miami Heat. While the Heat gave up the most points in the playoffs in franchise history with the 130 mark from the Philadelphia 76ers. The second game the other night was more what I expected. The Heat won 113-103, really slowing down the pace of this game, really attacking the three-point shooters, compressing them a little bit. I read the article in the Wall Street Journal about how the 76ers have a four-point line in their practice facilities so that they can train their players to really play deep off of the three-point line and really spread the court as much as they can for Simmons and Embiid down low. You didn't see that too much. I saw them really kind of compressing down the three-point line. They were missing some shots, and so they really started to fall down on that three-point line. The court got a little smaller. You saw a lot of turnovers by them. The Miami Heat coming up big with a lot of turnovers. You had points off of turnovers, 15 for the Heat, and the Philadelphia 76ers had 14 turnovers on the night. So a big night for the Heat, a big comeback night for the Heat and their defense. What do you think of this series? Is this a kind of a coin flip with the youth that the 76ers have, or do they just have to kind of steady the ship until Embiid can come back onto the court?
You know, I would say it is the youth versus the experience. Mm-hmm. Dwayne Wade is probably the most experienced playoff player in the NBA right now. You know, with, you know, he's been to, what, four finals, I believe, four or five. And he's won three of them. So, you know, so Dwayne Wade's been here before. Dwayne Wade's not worried about down 1-0. And, you know, we really saw that yesterday. We really saw him, you know, he had, what, 28-7-5, something like that. And, you know, he's playing really well. He's playing really experienced. But on the flip side of that, you know, you have the young guys. You know, you have the run-and-gun guys. Who are like, you know, we're youthful, and that's how we're going to beat you. We're going to beat you with really quick. We're going to beat you with a lot of threes. And that's kind of the 76ers that we're kind of used to seeing. Now, it's really who can sustain it the most, who can be the most consistent throughout this entire series. And I think the ones that we see be the most consistent is kind of the ones that we're going to see be the best here. But, yeah, you're kind of just weathering the storm until Joel Embiid gets back. Because once he does, as you were saying, they're able to stretch the floor more. They're able to play deeper when he's in the lineup.
Now, the moment that you have been waiting for, Brennan, the Cavaliers playing the Indiana Pacers, surprising game from the Pacers, from the Cavs. You have the blowout win for the Indiana Pacers. They win by 18, 98-80 win, snapping the streak that LeBron has in the first round, the 21-game streak, which was the best since, what was it? I think it was like 1984 was the streak.
It's been a while, yeah.
And so you have LeBron James. They have to go back to the drawing board a little bit. You want to see things get fixed. Part of me wants to believe in the Pacers. I am a really big Oladipo fan. I really like Miles Turner. Part of me wants to think that the Pacers have a real shot at pulling this off. The other part of me says that LeBron James is still LeBron James, still had a triple-double, 24, 12 assists, 10 rebounds, And you saw a team that is super reliant on outside shooting. They just didn't hit. And it seems a little bit like what happened in the Rockets game against the Timberwolves, where you have a bunch of great shooters who just couldn't manage to hit shots. You have a bunch of guys who are dependent on three-point shooting. You have Rodney Hood. You have Kyle Korver. You have J.R. Smith. You have Jordan Clarkson. These are all guys who need to hit big shots from downtown. And J.R. Smith did hit 50% to his credit. But for the most part, these are guys who need to hit a lot of three-point shots to really contribute, not huge defensive presences, especially in this one on the court. At least over the last season, they haven't been. And so you need them to knock down shots. And that's kind of where this was, is that they just weren't able to knock down shots from range. Which side are you falling on? Is this the Pacers actually have a shot at this? Or is this the Cavs didn't just didn't hit enough shots from outside? And with how bad their defense have been all season long, that's really what comes down to, is that they just need to get hot from three.
I'm going to take the easy answer, and I'm going to go D, all of the above. I would just say, you know, it's the easy one. Yeah, I'm sorry to teach it. I think it's all. But yeah, I would say it's a little bit of both. You know, you were saying the Cleveland Cavaliers, not a huge defensive presence team.
To say the least.
Outside of LeBron James. Yeah, not a lot of players that are playing good defense. They're relying on a lot of offense, a lot of scoring, and that's the downside. If you're not hitting, yeah, it really shows. And now you're down by 12, you know what I mean? So a lot of empty possessions sometimes. But the flip side of that is I also think the Utah Jazz, they're in the Western Conference. We're talking about the Pacers. The Pacers, they look really good. You know, they're playing really well, and they're able to, you know, players that, you know, like Miles Turner, Oladipo, even Bogdanovich getting in the mix a little bit there. You know, they're able to spread the floor. They're able to really spreading the Cavs thin. There were so many times where they would suck in the defense, kick it out to a wide open three. Yeah. And it's just like, oh my goodness, they are really making the Cavs go all over the place here. So yeah, I would say it's a little bit of both, but the Pacers do look really good. And I mean, but as you said before, LeBron James is LeBron James. And he's been down 0-1 before,
yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
I don't think he's worried about it.
Well, and the other thing too is, first, I don't think that Oladipo is going to go 6 of 9 from three for every single one of these games, right? He's not going to shoot 66% from range every game. And when he doesn't do that, that puts them in a little bit of a tougher spot. You have Stevenson going for 1 for 4. You have Collison going 1 for 4. You have Miles Turner going 1 for 2. You have Bogdanovich going 1 for 6. So without him really hitting a great amount of his shots from deep, this is a little bit more of a sketchy game from range for the Pacers. The other thing is, too, I read an article on The Athletic. One of their reporters, whose name escapes me, I apologize. But go check out The Athletic. Really great stuff there all the time, especially on the NBA playoffs right now. But he wrote an article talking with Jeff Green, and the mindset, it seems, coming away from that, for the Cavaliers, obviously they need to tune some things up on defense and how they play the screens. You saw on screening for Oladipo, a lot of times they were able to get him open looks. You just can't have that. You got to have guys either switching or fighting through those screens. But the other side of it is that it seems like the Cavaliers, a lot of these guys are just chalking it up to, we just got to make some of these shots, and we know we can knock down these shots. We know we can outscore teams. We just got to do it, and we just didn't do it in this game, and we can do it in the next game. And there's something to be said about not only that confidence, but not being shaken by an 18-point loss when you are a favorite with a guy like LeBron James on your team all the time. And so I think that this is more of anomaly makes it, I think, takes too much credit away from the Pacers, but this is more of an outside performance rather than the norm for this series going forward.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, as you're saying, outside of Oladipo, there wasn't a ton of guys that were playing really well. But, you know, they're playing really good team basketball. And I think, you know, a lot of the times you saw Bogdanovich force two, you know, and one play, you know, had two and one plays. You know, you had Miles Turner doing well on the inside. Just doing, and that's all it comes down to. It's really just doing their role, you know, just doing what you're going out there to do, not trying to do too much. You know, And with the Cleveland Cavaliers, when they're not hitting, really, there's sometimes on defense, and we were talking about this earlier, is how sometimes it's just LeBron out there. You know what I mean? And it's there's a wide open three here, a missed backdoor layup right there. You know what I mean? So it's like a lot of this is spread thin. And if the Pacers keep forcing the Cavs, you know, to play, you know, if they're making shots hard for them and, you know, they're stretching them thin, the Pacers got a really good chance. Doesn't matter who's on the other side.
Side note, if Oladipo comes out and they cannot beat him with either a double team or just in man-to-man defense, and LeBron feels like he really has to switch onto Oladipo, there's nobody on this team that can guard Miles Turner. Kevin Love can't do it. Tristan Thompson definitely can't do it. He only played just about 2 minutes in the first game. Larry Nance can't do it. If LeBron has to switch off of Turner and go on to Oladipo or switch onto Oladipo, and somebody has to guard Turner, and if LeBron isn't on him, nobody on this team can guard him.
Yeah. Seeing as there's no one on the court that he can get pregnant, I don't think Tristan Thompson can do any good here.
Oh, no. You know what? That's where we're going to end the episode. Right there, we're going to end the episode with a legendary burn from the Flying Hawaiian. Thank you so much, Brendan, for coming on the show. And thank you to the Locked On Wolves listeners for tuning in to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.